Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In September of 1993, six scholars were excommunicated or disfellowshipped from the LDS Church. Dr. Margaret Toscano was definitely in the crosshairs, and while she wasn't one of the September 6, she was almost one of the September 7. So we'll talk about her excommunication and her dealings with church authorities over her writings. You won't want to miss this episode. Check it out. Also, I just want to mention the Mormon News Report podcast covers the week in Mormon news with a healthy dose of snark and commentary. Join Brant and Jenny every Monday to get caught up on the top stories in Mormon news. Now back to our conversation.
So in kind of talking about both my academic and spiritual journey, I, of course, haven't talked yet about my excommunication.
Yes.
And
I was going to ask you, are you September 6 and a half?
Yeah, I love that term, Rick. It makes me laugh. So I was actually... I was threatened with church action in 1993, which is when the September 6th happened, right?
Okay. And for my readers and listeners who aren't familiar with September 6th, can you give
us
a little
background? Yes, I'll tell you about that. So in 1992, 93, Elder Boyd Packer was really concerned about, he told a group, I think, of institute and seminary directors that the three big dangers to the church were feminism, feminist intellectuals, and gays. And I was already really involved in Mormon studies and in Sunstone, and I remember a lot of my friends joking, how many of the categories do you fit into, right? But then in 1993, during that summer, and I was one of the first, I was called in by my bishop and stake president. I was living in Salt Lake at the time. Paul and I were there in sort of the Cottonwood area. And I was told, I guess that Boyd Packer had gotten in contact indirectly with my stake president. And the basic message was, can't you control that woman? I had already written The Missing Rib, and we'd done the book Strangers in Paradox, and I was continuing to publish and talk about issues dealing with priesthood and women and the Heavenly Mother and so forth. But it was really the priesthood issue, I think, that disturbed him. I sometimes like to joke that Boyd Packer was one of the few people who really understood the implications of Strangers in Paradox.
Oh, really?
Because I think he realized that we were saying startling things. But so in September of 1993, and really we know, and I won't go through all of the evidence, my husband wrote a memoir. What is it called? Suddenly I'll forget. Something in Exile, Mormon in Exile. It's really you can look it up, my husband's memoir. But he goes through really carefully all the documentation to show, and very good evidence from newspapers, firsthand accounts, to show that Elder Packer was directly involved in the disciplinary councils of a number of especially intellectuals and feminists. So in September... And, you know, it seemed like more than a coincidence, you had several people who were called in front of church disciplinary councils. So the six were Levina Fielding Anderson, Paul Toscano, my husband, Mike Quinn, Maxine Hanks, who was the editor of this book of Mormon feminism, and I have a chapter in that book. So... Paul, Levina, Mike, Maxine, Lynn Whitesides, who was the head of the Mormon Women's Forum, which I guess in sort of controversial terms was the predecessor of Ordained Women, although it was not primarily about ordination, but just a forum for discussing gender issues, and we discussed everything. So it was seen as a threat. And then the sixth person was sort of the oddball, Avraham Gileadi, who had written things about the Book of Isaiah and the church going into apostasy, and he had quite a following. I haven't followed him since. He was actually, I knew all of them. They were all friends. But before any of them, before September in July, I was called in and told that, you know, my stake president was not supposed to tell me that it was that he was contacted by Elder Packer, but he did tell me. And so he told me that directly. And he basically was just saying to me, I mean, he was not a theologian. He's just saying, can't you sort of tone things down? Do you have to write about this? You know, I just don't want you to do it. And I just said, well, you know, it's not like I feel like I have to. I have a mission, but I feel like that, that the things I'm writing about are important to get out there. And that I also believe that it's not good for the church to have censorship or to feel like that, you know, our membership is tied to obedience in this strict kind of way. So I don't think we can have a healthy spiritual community if we try to censor speech. And my position was that I really believe that that if you're a believer and you have the Spirit of God, that you don't need to be afraid of learning things or hearing things, that you can pick out for yourself what's true and false. And I said that. I said, I'm not telling anybody that they should believe me. I've done research. I've really thought about this stuff. I'm writing it in all sincerity. And I actually think it's faith-promoting. From my point of view, it's faith-promoting. I don't think it takes away from the church. I think it adds. But I think it's really harmful if we try to stop thinking and speaking, because it creates an atmosphere of fear, which is not where the Spirit of God is. So I just, in good conscience, I don't feel like I can follow what you say. Well, then two things happened. Well, first of all, of course, they always want your husband there, right? When they call a woman and you've got to have the man there. So, and Paul had been, actually, Paul has written a lot too. And, but it's interesting that first Brother Packer was more concerned about me, the women's issues. And Paul kind of jumped into my defense. And I have to say, he got into this big conflict with Carrie Hines, our stake president. And, you know, Carrie immediately said, you know, you're more dangerous than Margaret.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure if that's really what he meant, but at any rate, but at the same time, I actually received a letter at that time before any of the other summons where it said, it was basically an ultimatum. You're not allowed to speak, discuss, publish anything to do with church history or doctrine in any venue, or we'll hold a church disciplinary council.
Wow.
It was that broad. I just said, I can't obey that. I said, I know you just think I'm being proud, but really it's not. I just don't think that's, I think that's unrighteous dominion to ask that of me. Interestingly, what happened simultaneous, that was like in July, is that my bishop, who was supposed to hold the court on me, refused to do it. So he disobeyed the stake president. The stake president wanted him to hold a court on me. Yeah, I guess you don't call them courts. That shows I'm old. Right, but he wanted them to hold a council on me, and my bishop wouldn't do it. And then at the same time, Paul gave a kind of a speech at Sunstone, and which was called Choose Love, Not Power, where he criticized the leaders for sort of their corporate structure. So suddenly he was the focus, and they sort of, and then you had this explosion. So you had these six people disciplined all in September. That's why they're called the September Six. They were all excommunicated except for Lynn Whitesides, who was disfellowshipped. And but at the time, my stake president said to me, well, eventually I have to get back to you. But people now, because of the internet, they kind of think anything before the internet, people didn't really know what was happening in the world, right? You and I know that's not true. But it's interesting because when that happened in September of 1993, the press exploded. Every day the Salt Lake Tribune had an article about this, trying to expose the church. And, you know, this is what Paul documents in his memoir. And
so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but my perception is in 1993, they were really after you, but because Paul defended you, then he became the target. So he wasn't initially a target. Is that true?
I think that he was a target because of Strangers in Paradox. Oh. But I think that Brother Packer saw me.
He was your co-author then.
Yeah, but you know his work, and I'm going to grab my water here. His work was important as mine. I mean, you know, he's done some really great theology. I think, though, that Brother Packer saw feminism as more of a threat. And then when Paul gave the speech, it wasn't just that he defended me. I don't think that would have been true if he just defended me. It was not that. It was because he critiqued the power structure of the church. And I'm trying to remember.
Okay, so the Sunstone presentation where...
Choose love, not power.
And then he criticized church leaders.
Absolutely. Okay. So he was...
So that put him on the radar.
Right. I think he was already on the radar. I really do. Mm-hmm. The evidence is that he was.
So it could have been the September 7th.
It could have been the September 7th. And interestingly, but actually, I mean, again, we don't have time to do this, and I've even forgotten some of the details, but Lavina Fielding Anderson has chronicled all of this so that you find stuff where she's shown all the disciplinary. Paul got in trouble. So this is why I say it was not just that he was my husband. I have to laugh because when we got married, everybody saw him as the one who was the writer and the theologian. And then I started doing my own stuff, right? But he was, this is so funny, that he was in trouble back at BYU for emphasizing grace. So Paul's first criticism of the church was that he felt like, he called it the behavioral heresy, that... the church was emphasizing righteousness as simply a matter of behaviors. You do the five things and you're a good person, right? And Paul really focused his kind of first theological writings were about the meaning of the gospel and the whole notion of rebirth and spiritual transformation. That was Paul's first interest and so forth. Although Paul started thinking about the idea of the fullness of the priesthood back in the early 70s, too, before he and I were married. He was part of a BYU class, kind of an individual study class, where I think it was even in 1972, they were trying to figure out if the fullness of the priesthood that you get in the second anointings was the same thing as the high priesthood in the church. So they did a whole class on this, and they were going up to Salt Lake and looking at documents. You could get into the documents much easier. Like they were said, can you tell us where the First Presidency documents are? Oh, yeah, through that hall, and you're looking at that file. And they're going through all this stuff. This is back in the early 70s. And so he was really interested in all of this. So I kind of say we've made this journey together, which has been very good. But actually, before I get too sidelined on this tangent, because I wanted to say this to your audience, one of the things that's really sad to me about everything that's happened in the last, you know, since the 80s and 90s, is that this idea of what it means to be a good Mormon or a good Latter-day Saint, if we want to use that, I'm fine. And I already said this with my reaction to my stake president, the idea that somehow if I'm questioning, if I'm trying to understand, you know, old documents and, you know, did Joseph Smith teach exactly what we teach today in the church, that somehow I'm destructive or that I'm anti-Mormon, anti-LDS, that I'm don't have a testimony. I don't like that dichotomy. I mean, even now after all these years, and I've been through many stages, you know, stages of grief, right? Because I have to say that my relationship to Mormonism is very sad to me on many levels, but I still consider myself, I'm not a true believing Mormon because I question too much, but at heart, I am a believer. And that doesn't mean I believe everything. I don't. And I have lots of doubts. I always have. I question everything. But the bottom line is that I've tried to deny it because, you know, as a good intellectual, you want to kind of say, oh, yeah, You know, I'm an atheist, I'm agnostic, and I mean, if you by agnostic mean do I absolutely know for sure? No. But I have to say that I have felt the Spirit of God working in my life for a long time, and I believe in the soul, I believe in God, I believe in the spiritual realm. I also believe that God is in the restoration. Does that mean that the church is all right? No. Does it mean that every, you know, I love Joseph Smith, but do I think he had major flaws? Yes. But that doesn't mean that I don't think that he was an instrument of God to bring us truth. And so I know that some of the things I say that some of your audience may think that I've been called everything. That wicked woman, right, or whatever. But that's not how I view myself. I love Mormonism. I love the history, the theology, the people. I get really upset at the church.
But I see
God working in the church, because quite frankly, the God that I believe in, and I certainly don't believe in one and only true church, because I believe in a God of grace and love who I think that God, male and female, I don't know if we'll get to that, Rick. I have too much to say about priesthood, right? But the God that I believe in, the gods that I believe in, their purpose is to redeem all of their children, and they will do whatever they can, and they're full of grace and love and forgiveness. And that's been my personal experience, which doesn't mean that, you know, bad things aren't condemned, right? But on a personal level, my experience is that whenever I turn toward God, the response, and it's not like I always feel it, absolutely not, you know. I think we all have what some people have called the dark night of the soul, where you just feel forsaken and you feel like nothing works. And, you know, and I have a lot of periods of just kind of, you know, I'm too busy to even think about spiritual things. You know, I can just barely get my job done. Too many emails. But on the other hand, you know, at this point in my life, it's really interesting that I feel like that God is at work in the world, in spite of the fact that it's very scary right now, everything that's happening. But I feel that God, male and female, they love their children, and that they'll even bring climate change somehow to help us. Maybe it's the mechanism of chastisement. I don't know. That's a whole other thing. But I just wanted to say that, because I think it's important for people to see that, you know, I mean, yeah, I've been labeled as an apostate. That's what I was excommunicated for. So it was 7 years later, 2000, and it's really interesting. I won't go into all the reasons why it took them 7 years to excommunicate me. Basically, it was two bishops who wouldn't hold a hearing on me. And it took them time. Finally, in 2000, there was a stake president who was very eager to excommunicate me. And that is a whole nother story of that excommunication. I told a little bit about it on that Mormons documentary. Right. And I've written about it in various places. But yeah.
So even though you're excommunicated, would you call yourself still a believer in Mormonism?
I would, in this larger sense. Again, I'm not. I'm a believer in a very complex way, you know. And
I think Michael Quinn would say the same thing.
Yeah. Again, Michael's an old friend of mine.
Yeah.
I met Mike at the church office building, both of us during research in 1971.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Awesome. We've had Mike on the podcast.
Yeah,
too,
so he and I have known each other for a long, long time. No, I think I'm similar to Mike in the sense that maybe I'm a more troubled believer than Mike. I don't know if that's true or not. But, you know, I mean, I see a lot of problems, but I love Mormonism in all of its complexity and troublesomeness. So, you know, in that sense, I guess I am I'm a believer that there is much good in Mormonism and that God's hand is in it, and that I really like the history and the people and the theology. I see so much good in it. But everything is a mixture of good and evil. After all, that's the tree we're partaking of, right? The tree of knowledge of good and evil. Nothing is pure.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Margaret Toscano. In our next conversation, Margaret will describe her feelings about learning about some writings from Joseph Smith about the Relief Society.
And I read all these startling statements. The idea of when he says, he's going to make of them a kingdom of priests, as in Enoch's day, as in Paul's day. Woo! That just sent me through the roof.
Wow.
I mean, even now when I think about it, I almost get teary because it was transforming for me.
Wow.
It was the answer to a prayer.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available at either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript. And over here, we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.